Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast that gives it all to Big Fire. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week, we are finally off of VOTOMS. And it's time for Giant Robo, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is a 7-episode OVA series that for this week we watched the first 2 episodes.
Yes. I'm glad we're done with VOTOMS, even though I enjoyed it in retrospect.
It's long.
Still like it's a lot. And the fact that we spread it out over like 10 weeks instead of 5, I think that was only more detrimental.
Yeah,
to the experience.
It did make it take a long time.
But conversely, this show's gone the other way.
this is pretty far from VOTOMS territory.
This is extremely quick. Not in like a fast way, but like it's movie like. And
yes.
Not meandering show like.
It has a different set of priorities. This is such a weird show in terms of how it was made. So we should maybe just do the introduction here of like the show history.
Yeah, sure.
So this is Mu Animation Studio, which is not. That's not a big name studio in my opinion, but I think the producer here is Bandai, in terms of who owns the rights.
Oh, so they got money.
This series came out from 1992 to 1998, basically one episode a year for 7 years.
Oh God, they got like a worse version of the Gundam Unicorn experience.
And the reason for that is that this thing was like massively over budget too. It took them forever to make every episode, and it was extremely expensive to produce. Which honestly, you could tell.
Yeah.
This is a series you look at and you're like, they spent a lot of money on this series. If you go look at like the list of key animators, there's a lot of big names, including one Hideyuki Anno.
Okay. There we go.
So this is just a huge production. I'll go through our cast here, and some of these are people you may not have heard of, and some of them will just make perfect sense to you. First, of course, this is the obvious one. The director is Yasuhiro Imagawa, best known for directing Mobile Fighter G Gundam.
Yeah, right. What's better than having giant robots punch each other? It's having mobile suits punch each other in a tournament series.
So he did G Gundam. He also directed a couple other series. He did storyboards on lots of famous series like Zeta Gundam. He directed also Getter Robo Armageddon and Tetsujin 28 Go. So,
okay.
A long history in the industry, still working today, doing manga, that sort of thing too. And I think his image of what this show should be is really like what drove it, because they take a lot of liberties with the source material.
Okay, there's a manga?
This is based on a 1970s manga series called Giant Robo. Let me get the name of the guy. It's somewhere further down on the document. By Mitsuteru Yokoyama. Manga was first published in 1967.
Whoa!
And ran until 1968. There are just 3 volumes of it.
That explains like how Astro Boy it also feels to me.
Yes, this is
like the
very...
way characters look and the way things are. It's like very...
And
Astro Boy.
So this is very... I mean, and Yokoyama did a ton of different series as well. He did Tetsujin 28 Go, which I said Imasawa also went on to direct. He did a couple of like martial arts series. He did some Magical Girl. He did some sci-fi supernatural series. So he's really like, he's the kind of guy who's been all over the place. And he's just done a lot of work.
That's different.
So... Anyway, so Imagawa has like some sort of vision of how he's going to adapt Yokoyama's works, which I think is important, because there are some interviews with like people who worked on the series where they're like, oh, he told us to treat it like this, and then it took us like 20 tries to get it the way he wanted. Like, he had this very clear idea of like how to mesh the retro 60s look with the 90s animation, and like really worked them to the bone to make sure it felt good.
I'm going to say this again.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Japanese work environment.
Koji Ito is our mecha designer, who's done mecha design for, and I almost cannot believe I'm saying this, Full Metal Panic, Project Akko, Zabungle, and a lot of smaller series. Can you imagine someone who did mecha design on Full Metal Panic did the robots in this series?
I like to imagine whoever was in charge, like the higher ups in Full Metal Panic, they're like, no, this is like an edgy show. You got to make like these like edgy black, very like gray, non-interesting very
gray
thing.
Suits are gray. I remember.
And in this, it was just the different. It was different. It's like, this is like Astro Boy. Like, things are round.
Go read the 60s manga. Adopt yeah. these super robo concepts, and like go as big as you can think of, and then go bigger than that.
Because this also feels like very like. I know this sounds weird. It feels like Mario to me. Because, like, when you think of, like, a Mario enemy or something, it's always, like, very round and cute and, like, they're, like, kind of colorful in a mm-hmm. way. Like, it's sort of like a Nintendo enemy. And that's how, like, the very first train sequence robot.
Yeah, what an incredible sequence, by the way.
Yeah. It's like, oh, my gosh. It's like, wow, this is, like, very... This is something else, right?
I think that the mechanical design in the series is so retro futurism. It's like they're in the 90s and they thought, what did people in the 60s think the future would look like, right? And
exactly.
They shoot for that, and it's this diesel, like, it's very cool. Our character mm-hmm. design is Toshiyuki Kubooka. He's done a lot of mech character design work on many Idolmaster series, as well as the original Gunbuster.
There it is.
So...
Also, I would say Idolmasters is still very popular, so he did well.
Oh, no, he did. I think he made more money on Idolmaster than he did on Gunbuster.
So and good job there.
Idolmaster is a series that's basically carried on its character design, right? Like, all of those idol shows are. He says having never seen any. And our music here is by Masamichi Amano, who is a composer who's done a lot of live action work as well, including Battle Royale, the 2000 movie, the mm-hmm. N64 video game, Quest 64, and lots okay. of other random series.
I have only experience with Battle Royale, and I don't remember the soundtrack.
Amano is working overtime on this series, though, on the music.
Yes. Yeah.
Another really standout moment is just all of the music in this show. Overall, Dan... I was like steamed by this show. I loved it. Not in a bad way. I was like loved it. I was really energized by watching
full
it.
Of it. Yeah. I had a very similar first impression.
Yeah.
I think the show looks amazing and is really fun. And I think we did ourselves a disservice by only watching two episodes.
Right.
Minor spoilers for the second one. The first 10 minutes of a 40-minute episode is a recap of the first.
Well, remember, it's a lot of sense. It came out a year later.
But because I'm watching it back to back, and I'm like, did I click on the wrong episode?
I felt
the same
way.
I was like, what? I'm like, oh, this is literally all a recap, which means that the second episode is only like 30 minutes, which is very close to just a normal episode of a normal show.
Yeah.
So we've only watched like...
I mean, the counterpoint is the first episode. The first episode is a full hour of hot content that comes at you, right?
Yes.
And a lot of stuff happens in that first episode, to be honest.
So I wish, like, so I'm, I, like, overall feelings are still good. I liked it. I had a good time. But I'm like, I felt like it was just, such a tease place to stop. Because it's like, we get introduced to a lot of cool stuff. But the second episode is a lot slower than the first. So it's like, oh, no, like...
I think the first episode takes place over the course of like a day, and the second episode takes place over the course of like an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, oh my god.
And most of it's a conversation with a flashback.
Yeah.
In any case, you're right that this is a fun show, and there's a lot less going on than in a show like Votoms. So the summary I'm going to offer here is almost too short compared to like what we were doing before.
Yeah, go for it.
The Shizuma Drive is a special power source that is completely clean and nearly infinite, ushering in a golden age on Earth. However, the Big Fire organization seeks to upset the world order, and they are opposed by Interpol and the Experts of Justice. Leaders of BF have collected two attache cases and seek the third, held by the inventor of the Shizuma Drive, Dr. Shizuma. Shizuma is rescued by the Experts of Justice, Ginrei and Tetsugyu, with the help of the newcomer, Daisaku Kusama, and his robot, Giant Robo. In Paris, the BF group uses two of its three prototype Shizuma drives to plunge the city into darkness and lift the Notre Dame Cathedral onto a plateau of land. We learn that someone who appears to be Franz von Vogler, a co-creator of the drive, appears to be alive. As the experts prepare to head off to Paris, their base is attacked by the BF group, led by Alberto the Impact. Fleeing with Dr. Shizuma, Daisaku and his friends are intercepted by BF member Ivan with his own giant robot. He tells us about the history of the tragedy of Bashtaro, 10 years ago, Vogler initiated an unstable prototype, and the Shizuma drives reacted and destroyed an entire country. The incident was wiped from history to avoid panic about the Shizuma drive, and Vogler was presumed dead. Shizuma himself begins a similar reaction to prevent Ivans from stealing his Itesh case, which contains one of those experimental drives that caused the tragedy of Eshtaro, and this allows Robo to make a counterattack and save the group. Unlike everything else in the world, which is shut off by those reactions, Robo runs on nuclear power.
The twist!
What a twist that is, by the way. I actually didn't expect that.
I expect this. There's something going on with Giant Robo.
You know that, but you don't know, like, it's such a twist that the hero is nuclear power for a moment that I was completely thrown off my game.
Yeah.
Highlights. For me, my highlight is this first train sequence you talked about.
Yes.
In particular, I like, my other highlight is just the music in general, but there's a song that plays when Ginrei throws off her Q costume and like saves him by jumping off the train. This like really
nice
sick,
Street Fighter reference.
These really sick horns play, and then it merges into the train whistle and it gets more dramatic. And also, when Robo launches or appears, it sounds like the Battle Hymn of the Republic, the melody.
Oh.
And it's not quite, but it's like ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. And you're like, oh, it's Robo's fanfare. and that whole introductory sequence is so ridiculously animated. Like, constantly moving trains, the jumping, the action, all of the characters. It's so complicated and detailed. It's really, I was like, my jaw was open. I was like, oh, this is what we're doing.
I really like the opening sequence as well. And that's like sort of my highlight, because I think shows that have like, it's such a stupid like seventh grade English class thing, but it's like, you gotta have a hook for your paper, right? You gotta have a hook. But this show has a hook, and that train sequence is like, it's like butter, man. It's so good.
you will watch whatever happens next after you watch that sequence.
Like, I think most shows nowadays have like a good hook. Like, think about like IBO, right? Like, the base gets attacked and then Barbado shoots out of the ground and destroys a mobile suit. Like, you, like something like really powerful in the first episode. But this happens in like the first 5 minutes, right? I'm like, no, it's like the first minute.
There's a minute of intro.
Yeah.
And then it's like a 5 minutes, like it's like a 5 to 10 minute sequence, yeah.
Yeah. And it's man. Sequence.
Yeah.
It's so good. And it's a great way to introduce us to what are seemingly our three main protagonists.
Yeah. So that's Tetsugyu, who's like a martial artist with chain axes, Ginrei, who is like a special agent, and she's got some sort of secret power we haven't seen yet, because Tetsugyu says, no, don't use your powers. But she's got guns.
Yeah. And so our Lara Croft.
Our little baby Detective Conan looking dude, Daisaku, who's got the giant robo, quote unquote, the strongest robot in the world, is the tagline.
Yes. So great intro sequence.
It's a good tagline. I wish I owned the strongest robot in the world, Dan.
Yeah. Listen, man, my life would be different if I had a giant robot, so I'll put it that way. I don't know what I would be doing personally, because, like...
Hey, Dan, how many tatami mats is your room?
I don't want to actually answer that, because it's embarrassing. It's a very small room, but it's probably, like, 6.
Oh, okay.
8. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to tangent there. If anyone makes fun of the Imperial system, they can't if they're from Japan. Because literally, a standard measurement of a room size is a tatami mat, which blows my mind. I mean, this room is 8 tatami mats. And people are like, oh yeah, I get that. It's like, just use meters. You have a measurement system. No. It's like 12 tatami mats.
Have you ever watched, Dan, oh my god, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name. It's one of my favorite anime.
Nichijou.
No. Tatami Galaxy.
No. I haven't. Of course not, Ian. You know I just watched Mecha with you.
It's one of my favorites, but it's about a guy at university who lives in a 4.5 tatami mat room. And every time he goes through university, he's like, man, that sucked. I wish I could have done it better. And he goes back in time and does it again. And it's
four tatami mats is not big.
No, it's not. It's really a great series, though. Made me cry. That's what I think of when I think about tatami mats, though, is Tatami Galaxy. All right. Thanks. Our first discussion point, we just need to get out of the way, man. Quality. This is maybe one of the best animated series I think we've seen. Part of that is, as is OVA series produced over the course of 7 years, there's a lot more consistency here than we're used to seeing in a TV show.
Yeah, It's got the OVA, like, this is very high quality, but, like, still long on, like, a movie.
It's got that Gunbuster feel, right?
Yeah. It's very common with all OVAs we've ever seen.
Yeah, OVAs should have a higher production value. I think that's just why they exist. But there's just a lot of detail. Like, the scenes with the mechanical stuff, like, where they break open a car or Robo bursts out of a container. There's, like, every frame has, like, specifically drawn parts. It's not just debris. It's not covered by smoke.
Yeah.
They show you everything. And for how much this show takes place at night, it's a very clear show.
Yeah, it's going back to that intrinsic amount of detail they have. I don't know if that made any sense, but mm-hmm. it sounded cool. When Giant Robot punches through that train robot and you see, like, the gears.
That's exactly what I was thinking. The wires and the punch.
It's like, oh my God. It's so, you're right, it's so clearly drawn, and of course it's not at a high frame rate, because it's but it feels like it is, because you can see the gears, and you can see, like, the things get destroyed, like, the wires fray, and it's like, oh my God. I can't imagine how long it took to just make that punch scene. Mm-hmm. Like, this, like, 2 seconds. It's insane. So it's unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah, the fight scenes are really good. I think the character design is really important in this show. Everyone is designed in that, like, Tezuka style. I think of it as Tezuka. Everyone's got really distinctive facial features, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of cartooned, not like character designed, where like, Shizuma's got his crazy hair. Everyone's got a really obvious silhouette, so you can tell who's who from a distance.
Ah, that's a good point.
And they're all drawn. They're all, it's all sort of a throwback. Nothing's very realistic here. This is a cartoon style series, even though it's drawn with the fidelity of the most fidelity you could possibly get in 1992.
Yeah. That's, I actually didn't, that's a good way to put it, because, like, as you're saying, not a single character besides the brothers look similar, and that's on purpose. So
yeah. And
like, Alberto's hair too is like,
oh yeah, but what I think is of it? That those big, like, circular hair things is definitely like that. I mean, maybe this is also a Yokoyama thing, but it feels like a Tezuka bit. If you've ever read, like, Astro Boy or something. And then the music, Dan. There's so much music. It's all orchestral. There's a lot of opera. There's a lot of sequences just set to music, which is also pretty impressive. And they really tie the music into the action. It's just a very well-directed series. It's the kind of series where you're like, yes, I see why this took you a year to make. Like, even with a huge studio and a lot of money.
Yeah, it just oozes charm and oozes just, like, passion in a way. Like, you can tell that there's, like,
they love
a lot of time was spent on it. Like, yeah,
and there's a clear idea of what this show is. That's
a good point.
Drives it forward. Speaking of which, I think we should talk about the setting. This is where we're going to spend most of our time this episode.
Oh boy,
because there's a lot in this setting. Is the most setting to ever have a setting, you know.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it does the open and crawl thing, so it's like, we're in for it. And then they also flash back to, like, the origins of everything.
There's just everything that could be in a show is in this show. Does that make sense? You know how, here's a good example. You know how Marvel Comics, right? They've been around in the modern form since the 60s, right? That's when we really got the Fantastic Four. But in the Marvel Comics, there's super science. There's magic, there's giant robots, there's mutants, there's psychics, there's like, martial arts. This is a lot like that, where this is an anything goes sort of universe.
Yeah. We see that pretty quick. It's like, oh, it's a giant robot show. And it's like, oh no, there's
one a little bit more. Robot.
There's a little bit more than that.
So Shizuma drives, though, are what we're introduced to. And they're, like, the most key element of this series, right?
Yeah, they're sort of a catch-all, where they do a good job of saying, I mean, I'm sure we'll learn the origins of them, because that's sort of like the underlying mystery, but they're like, hey, we have made this renewable energy source that has literally no downsides. I mean, asterisks there, right? We'll see what happens. And the whole point is that they can be scaled, basically, at, like, any varying degree of size. So you see the examples that they use are, there's lighters in the universe to smoke. All right, you gotta be cool. And even those have Shizuma drives. Or I think actually the smallest, I think, is a watch. Like, a watch pops open and there's a Shizuma drive in it. But then you can put multiple Shizuma drives together in something, like a car or a giant robot, probably. And that's what powers that. And there's some amount of recharging, they explain, that goes on there. They're not quite infinite.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, yeah, there are depleted Shizuma drives.
Yeah.
But they're so clean, maybe... so there's not, like... It's infinite in the sense that you will never run out of it.
Yeah, I like to imagine it's sort of like they're very good batteries, and you just recharge it with renewable energy. It's like, oh, you take it to a solar farm, and they plug it in. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's something like that. So the point is, though, within 10 years, everything in the series runs on Shizuma drives.
Which that's my biggest problem with this
show. I have some beef with this as well.
Which is what you just said right there, where... as Ian said in the opening sequence, is that there is this reaction that they have in Paris and towards the end of the second episode, where if you use one of those special Shizuma drives, the prototype ones, it shuts down all the other Shizuma drives. And the cool gimmick is that Giant Robo runs on nuclear power.
Therefore, my question is the only thing that can save them, because it can operate inside the dead zone.
Yes. It's pretty sick. And the thing we're all thinking is, how in the heck in 10 years
in Paris, did they get everything? Of all cities.
Yeah. How did they get everything from every other type of energy creating source to a Shizuma drive, right? There's no internal combustion engines. There's no gasoline, whatever. It's just like, oh no, it's just all
Shizuma drives. Why you would want to move to a Shizuma drive as quick as possible, right? It will save you a lot of money in the long run, but that's like an ambitious process to be like, now every street lamp, okay, we did all the street lamps, okay, now every oven, now every house light, now every, like, everything has to change. In theory, you could swap out generators with just Shizuma drive generators,
but that's a good point.
But the cars, for example, lots of people keep cars for a long enough time or buy used cars that there would still be plenty that don't run on Shizuma drives, unless they made it illegal to run a car on gasoline, which is,
I know,
is plausible.
We're getting, like, very political. It's like California. All ICE cars. We're not supposed to think about it
too
much,
but I just think the 10-year time span is a little too narrow.
I agree. I think 20
years
might have
been better, even.
Even if they said, like, 15, because that's when you can start lying to yourself, right? Like, 15? Yeah, 15 years is, like, a pretty long time.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that they needed these characters who made the Shizuma drives to still be...
to be around.
Like, ancient. And since it's a cartoon, they look exactly the same and they haven't aged, but it's still like, I get it. I understand the problems there.
In any case, the Shizuma drive really does form the core of the show, and
yes,
does inform, like, most of the sci-fi stuff is powered because they have Shizuma drives. Then there's Big Fire.
That's my favorite name. I love that. It's so stupid. It's like the most Japanese thing ever. Just Big Fire.
So, like, BF, Big Fire, which is from the original, is from the original series, of course. So Big Fire has, their goal is, we don't really know, but we know that they're a powerful organization with a lot of members. They dress like a racial stereotype, and it's really uncomfortable. they all wear black hoods with pink mouths. Like, it's really bad.
Well, they also, they do another thing too. I think in the opening sequence, they all have I'm going to just say it outright. It's like a KKK mask that's red.
Oh, yes, they also have a red KKK mask that they wear.
Which is like...
mixed messages from Big Fire.
Yeah, which is... Like I shouldn't go there, but as an American, right, that's the first thing I think about. But that's like, whatever. I
no,
can kind
of
pass
that. Every time I see a hood like that, there's also a scene like that in Castle of Cagliostro. So maybe that's like, for some reason, that's like a shorthand in Japanese for cults, is those kinds of hoods.
Yeah, but then you're right. The first dude we meet who's piloting the train robot thing I don't know if it's my mind that's corrupt or if it's their mind or it's what,
no,
but it's like very...
No, it's not us drawing a connection when there isn't one, because it is exactly as racist as it appears, right?
No, it can't be.
No, but I'm not like, saying that they're trying to be racist. I'm saying is that racist imagery. Like, if they were, they could not have been made a more racist image if they were trying.
Like, it's like the whole Mr. Popo thing, right?
It's exactly like Mr. Popo, which also is extremely racist.
Okay, but Mr. Popo, that one, like, Okay, I'm done. Let's not talk
about this. The point is, I was watching this with Anna, who did love it, had a blast, and she was like, this makes me uncomfortable. And I'm like, me too, Anna.
Oh,
I wish they just didn't look like that.
Yeah, I get it. It's, yeah. So it's not like a thing they talk about. It's not like a thing in the show, but it's just kind of funny how that's like, it's a product of its time.
So BF is led by, it appears to be Genya.
Kind of,
but he also, that guy might be Von Vogler.
Vogler,
Franken von Vogler.
It's a V, but they also pronounce it differently, and okay. It's German, so whatever.
He like Ogre either is the son of or is Vogler, right? Vogler.
Yeah, something. He's got a connection to the Barstahl tragedy,
Barstahl incident. The tragedy of Bashtaro, that's what it is. So, whatever. But in any case, there's also like a weird dude in a samurai mask who seems to be, they said earlier, like Genya's like, oh, he's observing us from the outside. He's got something going on. And then there's just a variety of other supervillains and giant robots involved with them. Like the experts in justice, this is like a genre hodgepodge group that I suspect, without actually knowing, is just a bunch of all of Yokoyama's characters from a bunch of his manga crammed into one group, right?
Yeah. I was gonna say, it's like we have a council of supervillains, and they're not really on the same side, but they're like kind of forced to be.
They seem to have the same ideas, but not how to do it, and they're like disagreements about who's in charge.
Exactly. Because they have a little bit of a tussle in the beginning. That's like a very...
Yeah, Ivan and Alberto and the samurai guy.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then there's the experts in justice, who is this group for Interpol. So let's see if we can recall all of these members, right? We've already talked about Daisaku and Giant Robo. He's the newest. He's also just a kid.
I closed the Mao page. I'm sorry.
There's Tetsugyu, who's the guy with the axes, and Ginrei, who's the girl with the gun. Then there's... what's his name? Taiso. He's the guy who has like the liquor, like the classic liquor bottle.
Oh, he's the super tropey guy.
Style things.
Yeah.
He drinks and he also spits it out, and he's got ki. Like his fists light up with energy. I've just watched both of those classic Jackie Chan Drunken Master groups movies.
Oh, really?
With our friend group, Dan. But you weren't there. Oh, I know. Your friend group
is what you meant to say.
but those movies are excellent. And this is definitely some sort of reference to that. I always think of two of Chin from King of Fighters, who has that exact shaped bottle as his mechanic. Then there's, who else do we have in that group? There's the leader, Shizuo Chujo, who just has black glasses, and he's like, I'm going to go fight. And someone's like, what? Chujo the Blind is going to fight? So he's got some sort of like crazy backstory or power.
Yes.
There's Issei Dojin, who's some sort of like... Shinto priest who uses like spirit tags and that sort of classic Japanese
like the fan
magic
stuff. Yes,
there's Dr. Go, who has a fan. He's a scientist, but he's the guy who has like the big fans and can do that.
Oh wait, that's two different people.
There's the bald guy with the prayer beads, right?
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
And then who are the blue people? Do you remember them?
No, but they're at the very end of the second episode.
Yeah, they like shapeshift or something.
Yeah,
and there's Kenji Murasame, who's the detective in France who wears a pink trench coat. He rules. Yoshi.
He's just
the
hanging
Transformer.
Out. That's right. I like Murasame Kenji because he's just like a character that is introduced with absolutely no introduction, and he is just in a very important like story related points at all times, and it's like I don't know what this dude's doing, but he's important. He's the guy who meets Vogler.
I've got good news for you about who Kenji Murasame is. Kenji Murasame is one of the main characters of Tetsujin 28.
So we are just watching a crossover thing, right? Is what we're doing.
This is a crossover of all of Yokoyama's works.
We really messed up by watching the end of the beginning, but
he's an ally of the main character. He's a secret agent. So in this, everything gets folded in together. I'm assuming the main character from Tetsujin 28 doesn't show up because he's probably too big of a name to include in this.
This explains a lot. This explains why we have robots and superheroes.
Well, okay, so why don't we talk about this, Dan? So
okay, yeah.
I read a bit about this to try to get a grasp on it. So yes, everything is combined into one setting. Basically, all of Yokoyama's works. So again, let's review some of these works. Tetsujin 28 Go, which is very similar to Giant Robot. It's a Giant Robot series.
Okay.
But then there's, let me see, Babel 2, which is some sort of like science fiction psychic Esper series. I think that might be maybe Ginrei's from that. There's a couple adaptations of Chinese folktales and wuxia martial arts stories. So that's where those guys come those from. Wow, who could those be? Sally the Witch is a magical girl series. Yami no Doki is a Jidei Geki. It's a period drama in which supernatural figures appear. So maybe that's where like Issei the priest is from. Yeah. There's a ninja manga that started a ninja boom, evidently. Like, so he's covering as many genres here. So
damn, I want to read these, man.
I know.
I'm getting like a little hyped. Hopefully it's not like, hopefully it's not too difficult, but
yeah. So I don't know. They might be easier to find there because they are considered, some of these are considered.
Oh, classics. I bet I can just go to the local book off and it's there for a buck.
Yeah.
But it's also being Japanese. So God help me.
Okay. So as a result of trying to combine elements from all of his works, it means that this is the, like I said earlier, the anything goes setting, which is a bit, it's a lot.
It is because as someone who thought I was going to go watch a super robot show, there is a certain amount of expectation I have with that, which is I have giant robots that are huge, that are that have like extreme powers that are interesting. You know, it's a super robot show, right? That's kind of what you go in thinking of this. And then I got introduced to a Dragon Ball Z-esque fight sequence, and I was extremely, not like put back, but I was like,
huh? Yeah.
What? I was like, this guy, like, they did like, okay, so first they tease you. He's like doing the anime run thing where you're like, he's like jumping around like huge heights and it doesn't make sense. And you're like, okay, that it's an anime, it's a cartoon, whatever. And then he starts shooting like invisible beam / energy waves out of his hands and like destroying things everywhere. I'm talking about Alberto.
Oh, Alberto. Yeah, like, he rules.
And I'm like, what's happening? And then one of the brothers, Taiso, then his hands light up and they get into like a Dragon Ball Z-esque fight. And I'm like, okay,
there's more going on in this series than I knew.
I'm like, okay, I did not expect any of that. Because again, the first part of the first episode starts off very super robot-y and only super robot-y. So
there's them jumping around on the trains and shooting guns and he's got axes. It's over the top, but it's resolved with a robot fight.
Yes.
As is the natural order of things is what we think, right?
This, and especially where you're right, there's like the samurai shogun dude. He like opens up his cape and Alberto's just like, see you later. And he goes into his cape, which is
nothing personal,
portal.
Kid. Yeah.
And then he like, the samurai dude just goes down into his shadow and disappears. And you're like, oh, okay, I now know what to expect for the rest of the show.
Yeah,
where it's like, oh, well, I mean, my god,
and they get captured by that guy like summoning ghosts or whatever to fight them with his magic and his seals, and like I kind of love it that they're like, they are like we could just do Giant Robo, or we could just do everything Yokoyama and go as big as possible and make this the most like most adventurous, bombastic OVA series ever made.
Yes, I think that is a really good, respectful way to do that. Mm-hmm. Because you're right, they could have done the lazy thing where said, I will have these characters from this other show, which I'm just learning now, by the way, and sort of neuter them in the sense that it's like, yeah,
they try to make them fit in the setting in a way. Right?
Yeah, but this is just like I want Alberto to fight Giant Robo now. Like, that's what I want, because like the power level's insane. So like,
maybe there's just a lot of respect here too for Yoko, like whoever the people who made this series clearly love the Yokoyama manga. Like, they're like, how can we make this the coolest we can make it? How can we make people really love this the way we love it? And it's like they couldn't resist doing all of his shows at once, right?
Uh-huh. It's great.
It's really
neat. I like that, but at the same time, going back to my original point, is only watching two episodes, I think, was a detriment.
It's a downside.
It's like, okay, now what's going to happen in the third episode? Like, what if I'm introduced to something else? Like, what if there's, like, crazy sci-fi or fantasy stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, what if, like, I mean, magic is kind of what's
already
happening
already sci-fi,
now,
too, so.
Yeah.
This is like a wuxia series, though, in the sense that like we're going on a journey, we've got a ton of side characters, a bunch of like villains show up, everyone's got a cool nickname, like Chojo the Blind, yeah, or Alberto the Impact, right? And like, oh, you have, that's the world's strongest robot. Like, there's all of this stuff involved, and they're going to save the world from this plot. It does feel like a classic adventure movie, or like a kid's series, or a, like Hong Kong action. It's just, I think that's like the vibe here, even though it's got all of these different settings and backgrounds and characters and series involved, the vibe is completely unified. The aesthetic is completely unified. Everything looks like it should look, I think. And therefore feels like, sure, yes, that's a part of this universe too. Why not?
It's just got that polish, man. I will just reference Nintendo again. It just like feels so well put together. Like you're saying, one vision, just everything works together. It's just, it's good.
Yeah. And I think, so this is technically a separate discussion topic. This is a completely unrestrained series, right? They're holding nothing back here. The advantage of an OVA is that you can really mess things up by the end of an OVA. You can gunbuster it, baby. You can end that thing 40,000 years in the future, and it doesn't matter. And so they're not doing, like, this isn't a Giant Robo TV series. They don't need to keep doing Giant Robo. They can destroy Paris if they want in the first episode, right? Like, people can die. People can like, get written out of the show. Like, you can do everything you want to do, right?
Yep. And it's got more time than a movie too. So it's like OVAs hit that nice sweet spot sometimes, right? Where it's like you can do a lot. It's got a lot going on, but at the same time, you've got time. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and this is like such super action. It's so over the top. The magic, the fighting, the robots are huge. I just looked it up. Giant Robo is 30 meters tall.
Yeah,
that's like a Gundam's 18. So there you go.
Is it Gundam 18?
I think
the Gundams were like 12.
No.
Am I wrong? Yes. I've seen the unicorn in real life. No, I actually don't know. I don't know how meters work. Do it in yards.
Head height, 18 meters.
Okay.
So actually, now I want to know, like, how big is Mazinger Z? Or is it just the Mazinger?
Probably like 50.
Yeah, like that thing is humongous.
Because like Gunbuster was like unreal large.
Yeah, well, like Super Robot Wars. Oh, the Mazinger's Z is 18 meters. So that's standard robot height.
But if you think of something like Voltron, you have these giant Liger Zoid mech things.
Oh, the Megazords from Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Super Sentai or whatever.
Those fuse together, and it's like, well, that thing's got to be a billion meters now. Stop using meters. We should use yards. I want to use the same measurement.
The action here is super over the top, and they keep throwing new characters at us and bringing back old characters. And I think, like, we often talk about the line between real and super, right? What makes a show, like, because people often are like, will criticize a show that people see as real robot. They're like, well, that's really a super robot show. This is an easy criticism to level at like 00 Gundam or like Unicorn or anything where like the new type powers get kind of crazy, right? Is, oh, now it's a super robot show. But I think it's all about the mood. This is a super robot show.
I agree with that, actually, 100%. Because I would never, ever in a million years say Gundam is a super robot show. Because it doesn't fit the genre. It's a genre more than, like...
Perhaps the Gundam directed by the director of this series is a super robot show.
That is, like, the one exception.
It's the same.
And also, like, SD Gundam and Build Fighter still don't really fit quite into those genres either. But, this oozes... the super robot, like, personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much, what is the giant robo, right? In the sense, giant robo actually, right now, is kind of real robot-y. Because he's, like, he's mechanical and he's nuclear-powered. And he might be kind of sentient, which is kind of weird. But whatever, we'll learn that soon. But he feels very much like he could be a thing. So it's like, opposed to GN drives, right? What are those? They just make energy.
What I would consider like a key identifier of super robots is, so in real robots, they often make an attempt to explain why the robots exist.
Yeah.
Why do we use mobile suits in the future, right? it's because of the Minovsky particle. It's because of needing to maneuver. Like, they try. Super robots sort of give you the robot as a symbol. And they say, this is the robot. Here's what it stands for. Don't think too hard about it.
Yeah.
That's why Ideon, despite being a very dark and serious show, is a super robot show. It says, here is the robot. It stands for, like, forbidden power, for untapped power. And this show, like, this robot is nuclear power. I think haven't seen the whole thing, but it seems clear to me Giant Robo is nuclear power in some ways. Because it is the only nuclear power, and that's very important to the plot. And so clearly this is somehow Giant Robo stands in for nuclear power in general. And I think you could argue we haven't seen enough super robot to have further examples, really. But there's no like military reason to have Giant Robo, right?
Yeah,
there's no need to explain that. It doesn't even run on Shizuma drives. They could be like, oh, we use robots because we have infinite energy. It doesn't. That's not why. But so I think, like, to me, that's the super robot thing, is the robot's more of a symbol, and I think Giant Robo is pure symbol. I mean, why else does it look like a pharaoh for some reason?
Yeah.
Like, it reminds
me of Big O. Big O and Giant Robo have, like, a very similar head. It's like the pharaoh-esque thing, right?
It's possible Big O is just doing a Giant Robo reference.
Yeah. When did Big O... Oh, I guess Giant Robo is a manga, sorry.
Yeah, and Giant Robo is 1967, so almost certainly before Big O.
Yeah. Oh, God. I Google searched Big O, and I just got Big O notation. That's not what you want to see.
Oh, I'm not ready for some Big O notation. My favorite's N log N, baby.
can you tell me the cyclomatic complexity of your code really quickly?
I haven't thought about programming in a very long time, and I'm happy that it's no longer a part of my life.
Big O is relatively recent.
It's like 2000s.
Minor side tangent. Yeah, manga and anime were at the same exact time, of pretty much, and they were 1999 to 2000.
Oh, I thought they were...
I might be thinking of
City Hunter, which is an older one. Yeah,
City Hunter is much older, but City Hunter is also not related to...
I don't know why in my head, but City Hunter and Big O are adjacent to each other.
That is very weird, because they're not at all the same. Ian,
City Hunter has a private detective, and
Big O is Batman with a mobile suit.
Yeah, they're all the city. Okay, whatever.
It's okay. We'll get to Big O eventually.
Oh, damn. Did you ever watch this show that was on Cartoon Network about the redneck who gets a giant robot?
Isn't it like Mega's XLR?
Mega's XLR or something like
that. Yeah, it's the one where the intro sequence is chicks dig giant robots.
Yeah, we should watch it.
Yeah. And the giant robot's head gets replaced with like a Mustang or...
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's the gear shifter.
To be honest, that would be a fun one to do here.
I kind of want to watch that. I used to watch that as a kid, but you know, it's like one of those shows. Minor tangent again. It's one of those shows where you go back and watch, and you go, oh, this is unbearable. I don't know how I watched this.
There's only 26 episodes. All right, sorry.
Hey,
we've gotten crazy off track.
We can do it. All right.
The tragedy of Beshtarl.
Yeah, it's a more serious
This is the subject of the second episode. We get the flashback.
This is our Evangelion reference. Evangelion.
An entire country was destroyed in this reaction. The horror here is that Shizuma drives are believed to be not only clean, but unlike nuclear energy, completely safe.
Asterix.
And now we discover that actually they could be worse than nuclear bombs if they were misused in some way. We don't know how common this is, how easy it would be for someone to do at home. So it was covered up so that people, one, wouldn't panic about Shizuma drives, and probably, two, so people didn't know it existed, so they couldn't try to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And, I mean, all right, surprise, it's a nuclear metaphor. We make this joke a lot that all Japanese anime comes down to being about nuclear energy and the nuclear bomb. But this really is about nuclear energy.
But side note, yeah, this one is for real. Jokes aside. Yeah, so, Ian, what a sequence we get. Our pink suit detective is on a rooftop hanging bodies.
Hanging bodies.
Which is really... is the part where this becomes not a kid's show.
No, it's because not a kid's show.
Our first part could have been, right? It was like people... Like, they do get shot, but it's like an arm, and it's like, ah, whatever. And there's some violence, but it's like, whatever. But then it's like two corpses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Dr. Vogler.
And then we get a lamp he's holding there. And a crow is nearby, or doves. Beautiful, great stuff, haunting. But also, you're like, what the?
Yeah, and this is where we get introduced to the tragedy of Bashtarl.
Oh, big beef with the tragedy of Bashtarl is they keep showing it in like a strobe style flashback.
Yeah, it's black and white, of course,
which is good because black and white is safe compared to the colors. What's dangerous about strobing, I think, is the colors. But anyway, yes. It's very annoying.
This is where we learn that there was a test facility in a country where, of course, some horrific thing happens. A giant eyeball demon thing gets summoned.
Or that's like the energy system or something? Very unclear. Yeah, it seems to be a robot.
That's where I get the Evangelion vibes from. Yeah. This is...
Vogler wants us to reclaim the night or something like that. He wants to bring back darkness. The world has been lit up by the Shizuma drives, and it's always lit up. And now he wants us to re-experience the night.
Yeah. Which, again, the guy explains his Japanese name. Gen, meaning like beautiful in arts. And then Ya, which is night. So Genya is beautiful night.
We're learning
on the nose, and he makes sure to explain it to us. So.
I love that though.
Middle schoolers who don't know the kanji yet in Japan, like paint the picture, right? I get it now. I understand.
Naruhodo.
Then you're on the same page. You got it. We get it too now. But this is the plot, right? This is it. This is like. I, if they do the thing where next episode they explain what happens, I'll be very upset. But
well, they sort of explained what happened or how it happened, but we don't know why he did it and how exactly the reaction works. So there's still mystery here, but we sort of know what the history, what's happened.
Yes. So again, we'll follow our pink suit, beautiful boy here.
Kenji Matsumoto.
The next part is he's just like in an underground facility now.
He's just sneaking around. Yeah. And he's like in disguise as one of them, and they discover, and he pulls off his costume, and he's got the pink trench coat underneath. Oh, it rules.
Yeah.
I love his Scott style.
There is the eyeball again in this facility. It's like on the roof. And we see Genya with the two captured prototype Shizuma drives, like installing them into like some machine. And he's like, soon my plan will come into effect, like as you were saying, like bring about the night.
And when Shizuma. So he has, when they're under attack by the robot, he sticks the third one into this car. Like he plugs into it into car something. Engine. And that causes all Shizuma drives to black out in the area around the city. What are they in? Nanking? No.
Peking.
They're in Peking.
But they also reference Nanking too, right?
They reference Nanking. Are these close together? Is that different? Anyway.
I don't know.
It
man.
Is in China. China is important in the series, especially because there's so many Chinese characters. So. He plugs it in, it wipes out all the stuff, and that's what wakes up the eye in France. Even though they eventually unplug it so that it will, the reaction ends. That's what, what starts, and now the eye just starts walking through Paris, like as a robot. So I'm really interested to see, is Genya his son? Is he inheriting his will? Is he actually Vogler? What's up with the images? Was Vogler trapped inside the eye somehow? Like, is he the computer? Is the eye Vogler? Like, there's a lot that could happen here. But anyway, very creepy. Not at all what was to be expected.
Yeah. Like, that's where I'm like, that's where I was like, this is not what I was expecting too. Because that very much like, for some reason, it reminds me of Evangelion. It reminds me of Full Metal Alchemist for some reason. Like, this weird,
it does
like,
actually. Like father, I don't know. Sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like there's something going on.
I get exactly what you mean by that FMA reference, which is funny because I don't quite explain it, but it feels like FMA.
Yeah. There's an eyeball somewhere, man. I don't know.
Well, it's like truth, right, in the eyeballs too when they go to the white place.
What interests
me most here is that it's this incident is wiped from history, right, and everyone believes the Shizuma drive to be safe except for those who know about the incident or who were affected, and. I think that's such an interesting warning sign about like don't ignore the problems with our energy sources. Don't forget like the tragedy of the atomic bomb. It's like this. It's sort of saying like we would be willing to forget if we thought it gave us happiness, but we shouldn't because look what could happen.
Dang, you really think more about this stuff than I do. Because you said all that stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, I never thought about that once. But thank you, Ian. That's why you're here.
That's why I'm here.
Explain it to me.
So, Dan, we have 5 more episodes left of this thing, which is great because I want more. Yes. But what do you expect from this series? Where do you think it's going to go?
Oh, God. This is such a hard point, too, because as I said, 2 episodes is such a tease because, like, every episode we're getting introduced to, like, what's seemingly a brand new huge thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would like, personally, for this Bashtaral slash whatever thing, I'm hoping this is the entire show. I think this show is too short in its 7 episode OVA series to do anything else. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like do that cool. I hope it's doing the unicorn thing where it's like, what's Laplace's box? And that's the whole show. It's about Laplace's box. Where I hope this does a similar thing where it's like, what's going on with Bashtaral? Why is Vogler back? What's going on? I hope that's what this is. And if it can just sort of keep doing what these 2 episodes do, I'll be super happy. But that being said, I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think this is going to do the, whatchamacallit. Like, this is going to do the whole Bashtaral Shizuma Drive thing, and that's where it's going to end. I would really like that. I'd like to get some full resolution on Vogler. I think the fact that they're not planning for any sort of sequel means that they have to give us an ending. And I think what we might see is the adventure portion for the next couple episodes, where they're making their way to the Eye, and they're fighting their way through various members of Big Fire. We get a little more robot fighting, because we actually have had very little.
Yeah, and they've been short.
But hopefully, I think there's also been a lot of emphasis, we haven't even been able to talk about this, about the developing relationship between Daisaku and the other experts.
We haven't talked about any of the characters.
Like, we'll have to do that next week. We already are almost out of time this week. but like Ginrei is a big sister, and Tetsuyu thinks Daisaku like doesn't take it seriously or isn't treating him with respect, and then the other guy, the drunk guy, Taiso. Like, hey, he's just a kid, could you really expect that of a kid? Like,
yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Do we
too.
Want to expose him to this, and that's why they don't want him to find out about the Bashtaral incident, because they think it'll ruin his idealistic view of the world, because he loves the Shizuma Drive, and we don't know how he got Giant Robo. Why did his dad give it to him? What happened to his dad? Why can only he use it? Why does it run on nuclear power? We have all these questions, so many of them about the characters, that I hope that the next 3 episodes are like character time. They fight their way through a bunch of stuff. We do the characters. And then when we get to these last 2 and they get to Paris or whatever, or wherever they end up, that's the big fight. That's the plot. That's the mystery.
Yeah, that would be paced really well. I agree with that. I feel like that's like 2 episodes to end it, to really get us to the end, would be like, oh, it'd be perfect. Give us some time.
This is a well-paced show so far. Other than obviously the recap stuff, which I just accepted as you can skip easily if you just watched the previous episode.
Yeah.
I think this is like, yeah, I think this seems like it's, they've put some thought into how much time they should spend on this stuff.
You would hope so, because you got a whole year to make an episode.
All right, so let's move into our mech corner here.
Yeah, this is probably not going to go too long.
We only got 3. We got the Drill Robot, which...
Drill Robot's my favorite.
Yeah.
Ah, so Drill Robot's so cool.
Drill Robot is the train itself turns into this big drill. Like, it's got a drill head, and it's got chains, and it runs along the train tracks, and basically immediately gets punched into a billion bits.
Yeah, I like how this thing just keeps on giving, right? It's a train. And then it, like, first grows arms, and you're like, wait, what? And then, like, a little head comes out, and you're like, oh, my God. And then it, like, starts, like, climbing up, like, the ferry bridge. There's, like, the...
Yeah.
That's where, like, the sequence where Giant Robo shoots out of a sick freighter and like, punches it. Oh, it's so good. But, yeah, it's like, dang, this robot's cool, man. It's just, like, so well animated, and I like how round it is.
Do you know what? The vibe I get from it is that it's really, like, Mega Man.
Yeah! That's where... I agree. It's super Mega Man.
So, and Mega Man is, of course, sort of like an Astro Boy takeoff. I mean, by sort of an Astro Boy takeoff, I mean, it is literally an Astro Boy knockoff.
Yeah, our boy Rock Man.
But I think like, yeah, that's the vibe we're getting here, and that's why the design works so well. Is you're like, it's a train that's a drill. Yeah, I get it. It's cool.
Yeah. You're right. In Mega Man, it's like one of those enemies where you have to run to the right constantly while it like comes behind you and destroys everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
The other thing we get is this big golden, it sort of looks like a shakodogi. Do you know those, Dan? Like the goggle-eyed sculptures that are famous in Japanese art. Oh no, Dan's making a shocked face.
No. If you talk about Japanese culture to me, it's, you know more than me, man, which is sad, but it's just like, I don't know. Shakugogi.
Let me see if I can figure out how to spell it, because I am failing to spell it properly. What is it based on? Shakoki Dogu. The Shakoki is this big goggle-eyed, like, round figure. There's a lot of sculptures from the Jomon era, and they sort of look like this. They're these big round things. They've got weird eyes. Oh. They don't float, but they don't really have legs in them, so it looks like they would float.
Shakoki Dogu.
And this thing projects a force field before it gets taken out by the Shizuma reaction and then obliterated by our boy, Giant Robo.
I think this is in Legend of Zelda. This is a Legend of Zelda boss.
Yeah, I think so.
Shakoki Dogu. Yeah, this thing's fine. Yeah.
It's mostly there as a plot device to keep Giant Robo out of the fight until they can have a conversation.
Yeah.
All right. And now the thing to talk about. Is Giant Robo.
It's our boy. He's here. He's huge. He's sort of
gigantic.
Speak.
Gigantic. All right, so Giant Robo has like the Pharaoh-style headdress that also makes me think of Darkstalkers, Anacharus, who's like the mummy character from Darkstalkers.
Oh, yeah.
He's in MVC2. He's got big round shoulders. He's got big hands. He's got like the studded iron skirt, huge flat leg, like flat feet and these legs. And his back is these big like tanks. And he's got like diesel style exhaust on his back. He's always shown like as really big, really dark, very solemn. God, he's cool. And he's got like naval style guns attached to his hips, right?
Oh yeah, like giant turrets. Yeah, those are cool.
Those are extremely cool. And the way he fires them is really good. Though he mostly punches his way through things.
Just to add to it, there is like a little, it's kind of cute, there's like a ladder on the side of his face.
Yeah, and that's where he hangs out.
Yeah, and that's where our boy Daisaku just like holds on to while, I don't know if you can call it piloting, yeah, where he
talks
suggesting.
To him with a signal watch, and he's like, Giant Robo!
Yeah, it's cool. If you look up the old images of Giant Robo, those are also a treat.
Yes, they are a little different.
They look like you can see the essence of the of.
No, they redesigned Giant Robo for the series, and it worked out.
They did a good job. Old Giant Robo.
When you look at old Giant Robo, and you look at this one, you see like this is what it should have like. This is how it is meant to feel when you look at the old one.
Yeah, they really gave it the Demon Souls remake.
Well, it's more like they like remembered what it felt like to watch Giant Robo as a kid and made it look like that.
Yeah, and it's like, and it's good. It's good now, not bad like it was.
It's a great hero suit. Like, I'm happy to watch.
Yeah, I like the proportions. I'm not a big guy for, as you know, chunky boys, unlike you, but it just feels good in this situation
when it shows up and it like bursts forward. You're like, oh yeah, Giant Robo's here. It like gives you that feeling like a kid.
So fat, man. Oh, I love it.
Daisaku's VA, by the way, is putting in some real work, like. He's a good. I think Daisaku's voice acting is pretty good.
Yeah. You're watching in Japanese, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I am too. Yeah. It's surprising that the voice actor for Daisaku is not a girl.
Yeah.
Because that's like the cop out, right? So I'll just make it a girl. Just make it an older woman, so that way it sounds sort of like a young boy. It's like.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Don't like that.
Dan, we already looked forward and everything, so what are your final thoughts?
I mean, final thoughts are my final thoughts, man. I liked it. I want more, not because the show is bad, but because like I'm like, dang, this was hard to form opinions on like what felt like such a little amount of screen time that I've watched. Like, how much was it? Like 70 minutes-ish? No.
It's like 90 like 80. Minutes.
Okay, so it's like a short movie. But that being said, there's just so much, like, as we talked about, there's just gonna be so much more, like the Pashtaro incident, big fire, even like it feels like we haven't even been introduced to all of our protagonists yet.
Yeah, I agree.
Interpol. So it's like, oh my gosh. So it's like, it is, it's like, I like it. I truthfully, I've been enjoying the show, but man, like I can't say I love it yet because it's just like, just feel like I haven't watched any of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so I'm excited.
Despite
that's
that,
all I can really say.
Damn, we only watched 90 minutes and we talked about it for an hour. Like, we had no problem filling our podcast time.
Wow.
Because there
it's
was
almost we, like it's a
and
good
we left
show.
Out big chunks of discussion, right? Because we yeah. didn't even talk about the characters very much. My final thoughts, I should have said this right at the beginning of the show. Giant Robo just got a huge Blu-ray release in America.
I think so, you said that, though. I think you said that last
week. I said that last week, but like, make
yeah, okay.
sure like that is the best way to watch this, so go check it out. Final thoughts? This show is, like, I'm having so much fun with it. This was a good thing to follow Votoms up with, in a way, because it's just, like, easy, breezy. It's
so different, yeah.
Yeah. I think this is a really fun time. Like, you should just watch it. Experience the spectacle for yourself. It will surprise you in at least one way. Like, even if you've watched this episode, something about it, I think, will be weird or shocking to you.
Yeah, I think that's great, because minor little point here at the end is that I don't think you need to be a Mecha or Super Robot fan to enjoy this.
So no.
Conversely, where I think you got to be a sci-fi fan to enjoy Votoms. I don't think normal people can watch Votoms.
No, but Robo
but this,
is short enough and broad
yeah.
enough and fun enough that it's sort of like, you know how Ghibli movies are for everyone, right?
Yes, as I kind of what I was thinking. Yeah.
Non-anime fans love Ghibli movies. In the same way, this is the sort of movie, if you can get them to watch an OVA, which is an ask.
It is.
This is the sort of thing that's very easy to digest, and it's got something for everyone, and it's just a good time. We didn't
exactly.
even talk about, by the way, how this has, like, all of the energy of Lupin the Third.
Well, don't worry. Next week, we'll have the Lupin the Third segment, where we just yeah. insert Lupin the Third.
I wonder if there's a Lupin movie with a robot in it, because I would love to do some Lupin on this podcast.
God,
I'm sure I can stretch my definition far enough.
I like Lupin a lot too, man. So, like, if you can find one, I'll be there. You know, a motorcycle is a lot like...
In many ways, they're a customized yellow car, which has the rockets in it. So, like, so next week, watch the next three episodes of Giant Robo. That's 3, 4, and 5. And because we decided to split this into three, even if we felt like we didn't watch enough this week, I think we'll still have plenty to talk about next week without
yeah.
finishing it off. If you can reach out to us, and if you have more information about the staff on this series, if you have more information about, like, the weird production history, and most importantly, if you can tell me what all the frickin' references are to all of Yokoyama's other works in this series, like who's from what and so on, absolutely reach out to us. Our email address is mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. Our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Till next time, will you be able to survive?